Good morning. As Matt mentioned, I'm Chris Willis, and I have the pleasure of knowing a number of you guys, so that adds a little bit of pressure to us. So you'll be able to test what I'm saying here and how I'm living. I want to start by thanking Matt, because Matt set me off on a journey. What you're going to hear is this is all about a journey, and it's a journey that I've been through. I want to make something very clear, though. So you guys may remember this. So Hair Club for Men, founder had a saying, and his saying was, "I'm the owner, but I am definitely the user." So as I talk to you, I want you to know that I have not got this licked. A number of you guys said, "Hey, I'd love to come learn me more about balance." When Matt called me to ask about this, which I'll talk about more, I was like, "No way." And some of you guys who know me know that my schedule can be crazy, and sometimes I'm hard to catch up with, and I'm over-programmed, and that was particularly the case about 6 or 8 months ago. So we're going to talk about that. But know that I am absolutely not, I don't have this figured out. What I'm going to share for you today and my prayer for you today is that you get some nuggets that might be helpful to you. There's a lot here. I've had the good fortune of thinking about this for several months, and again, it's something that I've struggled with my whole life. I also don't see it as work-life balance. So balance, work-life balance, that term says that one's good or one's bad. It's you have to push and pull between the two. What I want you to hear from me today is it's not a work-life balance, it's a work-life integration. And you need to keep score on how you're doing. You need to figure out what's important to you. And you need to keep score on that, because the world will tell you to do different things. And it's a constant struggle. It's a relentless world that tells you how you should be keeping score. So we'll talk about that. Scorekeeping is a great tool in balancing or integrating our work and life. So again, know that I don't have it figured out. So here's the story. Back last June, I was in a motel room or hotel in New York City. I had just come from traveling for about a week before. I have a daughter who was doing a ballet program in New York, so I stopped in New York for the weekend to hang out with her. This was, I think, a Friday morning. Matt left me a message and said, "Hey," because I was working, actually, that Friday morning. Didn't get the phone. Got the message, said, "Hey, we want you to speak on work-life balance." And I saw that, I heard that, I was like, no way. I've been traveling, I'm tired, I haven't seen my family, I'm here to see my daughter, but I'm fried. There's no way. So I called him back, and I left him a message. He's a pretty busy guy as well. I left him a message, and I said, "Matt, you know, faith at work, you heard the stuff about Interstate Batteries. Happy to talk about that, that feels much more comfortable. But if I did this, my wife would laugh me out of the house. There's no way, I would be completely hypocritical to do something like this." So I left that message and went for a jog. I was kind of in Midtown, so I was able to jog up into Central Park, and whenever I jog, I generally listen to podcasts, and that's the way it works. That's the way it works for me. That podcast that day was Andy Stanley, and he was talking on balance, and it was like a punch in the gut when I got it going, and he started talking about balance. So what I felt was God was not being subtle to me at that point. God was just pushing, you need to do this. And by the way, just copy this thing. So I did some of that. And also note that when you I'm going to reference a lot of materials in front of you. There's a reference guide that we'll look at. There's so much out there on this topic. It's a tough topic. It's, again, something I've struggled with for my whole life. Andy Stanley's done a ton on it. Paul has spoken probably 3 or 4 or 5 times on it. It's funny, a lot of it's very, very similar. And actually, I think Andy might have ripped Paul off on the sermon that I was listening to, because Paul actually did something very similar in January of last year. So I went for this jog, hit me like a ton of bricks. I got to do it. I came back, I called and left Matt another message. "Hey, all right, I'm in. Just please put it in late November, or put it towards the end of the year so I've got time to prepare." So that's what I did. I accepted the challenge, and realizing that I had a hole to dig out of, and how could I do this? So God nudges you to do things. I had to do this, so I did it. So let me tell you where I was at that particular point. I'd come off probably the busiest year of my life. Interstate Batteries had just gone through. We're a 64-year-old company, just turned 64 last week. We had never been through a reorg, and as head of HR, I had never done anything like it, and we went through a major reorg where we moved a lot of team members around. You saw my bio, team member. That's employee, what we call employees at Interstate. Moved a lot of team members around, replaced the leadership team, actually with some of the work, you in the room here. So I was in a bad spot from a work perspective. I also was going through a leadership program that was fantastic. 3 to 5 hours additional a week, though. Brutal, brutal time commitment there and very intense. And thanks to some of the people in this room, I got involved in a service organization that was absolutely awesome. It is awesome, but it took 5 to 10 extra hours a week. And that's all of these were year-long commitments. And I was coming off the back of all of those really ending. So I was spent. And I was in a bad spot from a work-life balance perspective. I'd been in survival mode for about a year. What made this particularly interesting is this is kind of the way I'd been my entire life. I'm a pretty mellow guy. I grew up in Louisiana, but I have always been obsessive about whatever I get myself into. And as a kid, I was from one thing to another. And when I got into junior high, I started getting involved in leadership opportunities. I started doing a lot of stuff in high school, president of the class, all those kind of things, just kept going, and I got rewarded for it. I had a to-do list I used to keep on my hand, and as I remember distinctly as a junior, this to-do list went all the way up my arm, and I'm a junior in high school, and a girl was like, What is that? What's wrong? What's up with you there? That's when I realized maybe I got something I need to think about here. But I kept that going in college. Had some college guys here that knew me in college. I was super involved in college, fraternity, interfraternity council, founded some clubs, did a lot, and I got rewarded for it, right? So the world was telling me, just get after it. Just keep going. And I kept it going all the way into the profession. So being a lawyer, I would always work super hard. I got rewarded for that. The world was telling me, just keep working, keep doing it. And I was getting rewarded. So, and I got instant feedback. You guys, this is awesome. You're doing well, okay? The other thing is my personality. I mentioned personality a little bit. If you guys have done strengths finders or know what that is, my number one strength is achiever. And what achievers do, they just keep going. They have checklists and they just keep going. Well, the dark side of an achiever is overdoing it. The other issue I've got from a personality perspective is I'm a pleaser, so I don't like to say no. There's a lot to that potentially as well, but so you throw all these things together and you have somebody that just keeps burning it, right? And I've heard my parents, you look tired, son, why are you doing all this stuff? I just kept it going because it felt good and it was fueled by just the way that I was, right? It also, you do three things in a year if you're a pleaser, or if you just want to keep going. So those three things, I was like, yeah, this is awesome. We'll do it. Well, that's great, except you got a family, and that's my wife and daughters. I also tell you, last year I did a lot of damage to my family and my relationships to my daughters. Everything I did was awesome, and I believe some of it was God-ordained with what we're doing with Interstate, and I've grown tremendously through the leadership program, and the service organization was a blast. But I did some pretty serious damage, most unfortunately, to my wife and I's relationship, to my kids' relationship, my kids, and they knew I was not around last year. And what was probably worse is I wasn't present either. I was thinking constantly about work and what was going on with the lives of the people that we were moving out of the company and moving into the company. So it was brutal. And I had a ton of guilt, still have a fair amount of guilt about that. So that's when I started really thinking, and then Matt's call, started thinking about work-life balance and really what do I need to do here? Because there comes a point. And that point was last year for me, when you can have a certain amount of talent and a certain amount of drive and that kind of thing, and there's a lot of amazing, talented people in this room, and you might think, and I did for a lot of years, is you could just keep loading. I've got the capacity. I can do it, right? I can just cram something else in, and it'll be good. And I'm the only one paying the price for it, right? So physically, I don't get as much sleep. You know, I'll miss a workout there, whatever. The problem is that's that... At some point, you stop being good at whatever you're doing. I was nowhere nearly as good at any of those three things I was doing as I could be, and that hurt, right? The scorekeeping was telling me I wasn't doing well. And then also, somebody pays a price. I was talking to a mentor through this thing, and he said, every time that you say, you know, I've got it, I can handle it, I'll do it, somebody is paying a price. Mostly, I told myself it was me, but there was no doubt that my family was paying a price for what I was doing. So that was tough. So what do we do about this kind of thing? Andy Stanley's sermon. Take a look at the, in front of you is Psalm 90. Take a minute and take a read of Psalm 90. It's long, but it's really powerful. Okay, so both Paul and Andy Stanley do a lot better job explaining Psalm 90 than me, but let me talk a little bit about what I saw there. Note that it was written by Moses. So Moses had 40 years as in the Pharaoh's house. He got kicked out of Pharaoh's house for murdering somebody. Then he wandered around for 40 years, or not wandered around. He was a shepherd for 40 years in the desert. Then he brought the Israelites out of Egypt and wandered around to get in the Promised Land. So 120 years he lived. And he didn't know how this all was going to work out, right? When he was in the desert, he was thinking, maybe this is just it. And whenever I'm gone, and then my kids are gone, and their kids are gone, nobody remembers me. So I'm done. That was probably some of his thinking. Moses had a pretty awesome perspective on time, if anybody does, through. So he writes here, and I put it in red, before the mountains were born, you were brought forth the earth and the world, and from everlasting to everlasting, you're God. So from everlasting to everlasting, from the beginning to the end. So Moses has got this long perspective, and he's looking at God and going, man, that's it. That's time right there. And if you keep reading, I'm just like the dew, or I'm just like grass, and I'm here, and then I'm just gone. So then he goes on to talk about, he talks about, all our days will pass under your wrath. We'll finish our years with a moan. That's kind of dark. And he talks about the length of our days being 70 years. And if you're strong, you might get 80 years. And then you fly away, and then that's it. So if you guys, Andy Stanley mentions that song, I'll Fly Away, that's where this is from. But then he goes on, he says, to teach us to number our days and that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Hopefully you guys have heard that before. And by wisdom, the way I interpret that, or an interpretation of wisdom, is a perspective, right? If you're somebody who's wise, you've got perspective on what's important and what's not important, and how you fit from a time perspective. He's talking about the value of time here. So, heard that. Thought a lot about that, meditated on this, and then said, you know what, I'll number my days, right? So I sent this to our arts and crafts department at Interstate, said, hey, I need a slide that has some little animation on it, and this is what they sent me back. I'm not sure if I'm offended about that picture, but the guy who did it enjoyed doing it. So if you think about it, or what we found is so we're not talking everlasting, everlasting, we're just talking about the earth here. So the earth is 4.5 billion, estimated 4.5 billion years old. So that's a long time. That's still not everlasting, everlasting, but that's a long time. So we're at church. Let's add Christ in there. Christ lived about 2,000 years ago. So if you put that in the context of the earth, pretty short. Okay? And then you put me in there, which Carl did, and I appreciate the commentary. It's pretty much a blip or nothing. So as I numbered my days, I feel like I can get to around 96. I had a couple of grandmothers that made in their 90s. I'm healthier than they were. They grew up in Louisiana and had hard living and a lot of fried food. I think I can do better than that. So that's about 36,040 days, something like that. And I'm around 15 or 16. So I was hoping to get a heart of wisdom with that, and what occurred to me after that, after working through, okay, number my days, how do I really fit? Wow, I'm just here for a very short period of time, so then what do we do with it? Well, scorekeeping popped up in my mind. And this was mine. This is not in the sermons, and this has been my idea. We keep score from the moment that we're born. Somebody is keeping score. Whatever that baby weighs, however long that baby, some of you guys have had kids recently, the moment you pop out of the womb, somebody is keeping score on you. The world, your family, somebody. And it just keeps going, right? Junior high, if you're playing any kind of sports, grades, what you are on a team, Facebook followers, kind of cars that you drive, what you wear, where you go to school. Go back to that one. I'm not a Texas or an OU fan, but that's a painful score for some. Where you live, right? So the world, what country club you might be involved. Are you involved in a country club? Whether you do these are some of my favorite, whether you do triathlons or half marathons or any of that kind of stuff. And then that's one of my favorites as well. If you got one of those, I appreciate it, because I think that person said, I don't care, or making fun of everybody else that does that. So the world will make you keep score. And whether it's your scorekeeping or the world's scorekeeping, it's going to happen. And it just keeps coming. And again, the world will tell you to do certain things. The world will tell you to buy some of this stuff, or that you're valuable because you have it, or you're doing it, or because you've got a certain title, or you're doing whatever. That scorekeeping's coming. So, an exercise real quick. Look on your table, to actually turn over the page you were reading. Okay? There should be pens there. Take about 3 to 5 minutes, and this should be stuff right off the top of your head, right? What's most important to me? Three to five things most important to me. And what we're doing is we're taking a little bit of a shot at values. So it's what we think is most important, what we want in our world and our experience to express what is most important to us. If you've never done this, just take a shot. It's a longer process, so we'll go through it in just a few minutes here. But let's write down what is most important. And here's some examples. Some of mine are in there, but there's some examples of if you need some help. All right. So the second part of the exercise is go to the bottom of it, just bottom right below, and write down, pull out your phone and your calendar, and write down, where are you spending your time? Where are you spending your time and your money, your time and your treasure? And be honest with yourself on this. Again, calendar was very helpful for me when I went through this. Just look at it, and where do I spend most of my time? What do I invest in? Where do I spend my money? And I challenge you, write that stuff down for a minute. So what you've got at the top, or hopefully are your values. If you Paul did a sermon on The Road to Character by David Brooks. He talks about resume virtues versus eulogy virtues, and he talks about resume virtues or eulogy virtues are what they talk about you at your funeral. It's an awesome book and awesome series. And you've got your resume virtues. Encourage you to look, compare those two, and see which one are you really doing? Which one, if you say that's important, are you living up to that support? That's what I ask myself constantly, actually, for a while, even before Matt asked me to do this. Which values of those, or which the ones on the top, are aspirational? Is that something I say family is the most important thing, or God or faith is the most important thing? Well, where am I spending my time? And compare those two and really think about it. So we did this in 3 to 5, just a few minutes, but this is something that I encourage you to think about. Think about as time goes by. If you're interested in balance, it's really looking at what's important and how am I scoring, how am I doing against that? Am I being honest with myself? The other thing that popped into my mind is you can't always be great at everything. So if you've got 10 values there, and they actually line up with what you say is you're spending your time and your treasure on. Really think about it. What I found is you cannot be great at everything, so you've got to trade off. They've got to be some trade-offs. So you're not being honest with yourself if you're saying, oh, I'm a great dad, I'm a great X, Y, and Z as well. The other thing is, as I mentioned earlier, is the world is keeping score. This was particularly helpful for me. As I looked at those, I tried to keep score based upon what my true values were. So whenever I was making decisions, I'd like X, Y, and Z are calling me to go do this or go play golf or go hunting or I like road bikes, go ride a road bike. So where does that fit? So one of my values is health. So it fits there in the health part. But man, I don't know about the family side. So it gave me some peace as I think in any decision, I think, okay, well, what's most important and then how am I going to spend my time? Does this fit the values? And the other thing it also noticed is whenever I knew that something didn't fit in my values and I was doing it, it hurt. I could tell. And then also I learned to keep score. So weekly, I keep score on myself and how I did with those values, and it doesn't feel good when I don't do well. So I'm using that scorekeeping in a positive light. For most of my life, probably I lived with the way the world kept score. I just kind of floated along because the world was telling me, hey, it's good to move from Louisiana and go to SMU. That's a better... Okay, so just hopefully I'm not going to offend anybody. That's a better school than LSU where your family went, right? So I was scorekeeping on them. And then I should go to law school because that's a better thing to do. The world was keeping me, and so I just did it, right? Because I wasn't thinking about this. Other resources that all the sermons mention, and you guys may be familiar, is there's a book called Boundaries. And it talks about just a way to do this is set boundaries. Figure out what you're scorekeeping on and then set boundaries. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. There's a guy that I'm really good friends with who is not here today. Wanted to come see this, but he's having breakfast with his son because that's what they do once a week. That's a boundary that he sets. Our CEO at Interstate, whenever he first became CEO, he's a pretty young guy. He had a son who played basketball in Highland Park and it was his senior year. Despite this big new job, Scott said, you know what, I am not missing a game that Grant has because this is it. It's the last opportunity to see those. So we moved heaven and earth to make sure he could get, we changed trips and didn't do some things and did some things to work around Grant's basketball schedule. That was a boundary. There's also another awesome book called How You Measure Your Life. That's on the list of references where this guy named Clayton Christensen talks about how he was the center of a basketball team in England, and he wouldn't play on Sundays. If you haven't seen Chariots of Fire, go watch Chariots of Fire again. That's all about boundaries and these guys setting boundaries. Other resources are Andy Stanley's got a book called Choosing to Cheat. Awesome book. And he talks about, and Paul has preached on this, and you can go hear Andy talk about it, awesome about how there's a tension between home, work, and what the world will tell you to do. And you just need to realize that tension's there. And you're going to be cheating on somebody one way or another. You may be cheating your family. You may be cheating work. But at some point, you're cheating somebody. Again, what I showed you on here is what's important to you is figuring out who you're going to cheat there. Are you going to cheat the world? Are you going to cheat your family? Are you going to cheat what's important, family or not? And then lastly, I mentioned a little bit, Road to Character is also, that book's amazing. Eulogy virtues versus resume virtues and what's really important. Those are awesome resources. So let's get a little bit more serious about this, and this is some stuff that stuck me pretty hard as I went through this journey. So this quote, you're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to serve somebody. So unlike, a little different from Moses, that came from the great Bob Dylan. Again, looking probably at the second list, where you're spending your money and your time, we're all serving something. Could be ourselves, could be our family, could be God. In some form or another, we're serving something. In David Brooks' book, what I got out of that is the only way to true happiness and fulfillment is through service to others. That's what he came to the conclusion. We're serving somebody. I think for the first 25 years of my life, until I had my first 29 years of my life, until I had my first daughter, Grayson, I was absolutely serving myself. It was about me, and that's the way the world told me to do it, right? And I was successful at it, and the world was telling me that was awesome. So if you have a hard time thinking, okay, well, that's not me, I'm serving whatever, I've got this down. If you're thinking that, which is what I was thinking, and until Tim Keller's another fantastic, I think he's got a book about work life, Every Good Endeavor, that's on the list as well. Listen to a Tim Keller sermon, and this jogging podcast kind of thing, and this thing stopped me in my tracks. Your religion is what you do with your solitude. Now, what does that mean? So that means whenever you're at a, he mentioned bus stop because he was in New York, but if you are in a duck blind, which is what I grew up doing, or you are in by yourself somewhere and you don't have some distraction like this, you don't have something going on that's keeping your mind thinking about whatever the next thing is, whatever you're thinking about in solitude, that's probably a good indication of what your treasure or what your religion is. For me, absolutely, during that last week, it was work and what was going on there. So I like rode bicycles. I think I've talked about that a fair amount of time. That's something else that I have the tendency to slip into, thinking about, oh, what's the next thing? Golf, photography, stuff like that. Think about this quote. What slips into your mind when you've got nothing else? Maybe when you drive to work or wherever you're going after this, turn off any kind of radio or anything like that and just sit. What pops into your mind? Okay, that might be your religion or an idea on what you treasure. When I figured that out, that was really powerful and stuck with me. So, finishing up here, this lady was also mentioned pretty consistently. Paul has mentioned her in a couple of sermons. Andy Stanley also mentioned her. Tim Keller has also mentioned. This lady is Bronnie Ware. Bronnie Ware is a hospice nurse in Australia, and as a hospice nurse, she works with people over the last 12 weeks of their life, and she's got a book out now, and also there's an essay on some of the back tables, and I think there's one back there called The Five Regrets of the Dying, and she started interviewing over years. She interviewed people that were dying, interviewed her clients. And of the five regrets, number two was, I wish I hadn't worked so much. Okay, that's a no-brainer. 100% of men said, I wish I hadn't worked so much. Again, you probably, that's very intuitive, but powerful, but probably not a shocker. The second one was the bigger shocker, and a little tougher, and that is what everybody said was, I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not what others expected of me. So that's, I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not what others expected of me. So that was whether these people live for what the world told them to do, what their family told them to do, what history, whatever village they grew up in, that's what the job their dad did, so they did it, or whatever. It's, to me, that was pretty strong. And as you think about, all right, who's telling me, how are you scorekeeping, who's telling me what to do, and am I really living up to what I say is important, right? So you guys had a chance to write down what you saw was important. You got to start there. This is where the faith side of it comes in. So, are you living for the world? Are you living for yourself? Who are you living for? Think about that, because that was a big regret that Bronnie Ware's customer or clients had. Then you come into the faith part, and you start thinking, okay, so what do I want? What does God want for me? Is that list consistent with what God would want for me? These are all the things that I thought I had to think hard about. And then the other thing, frankly, and both Paul and Andy both hit this pretty hard, well, if I get honest with myself, all right, so what if I don't make it, right? I got these aspirations to have whatever financial security or have savings or buy a lake house or get a new job or become a CEO or whatever. What if I don't make it? What question is, what is it? Right, what really is it? And who's determining what it is? Is it you? Is it what you're serving yourself? Again, for me, there's no question, at least until I had my first daughter and started thinking a little harder about this stuff, it was all about me and what was next and making money and buying shotguns, and that was it. But as I work through this, I'm now asking more, what's God's plan? What is it for me from God? Am I living into that? I pray that pretty regularly, actually every day. What is it for me? And how's God keeping score on me? Because I'm probably going to need to answer that at some point. So, as I mentioned when I started, this is a huge journey. I do not have it figured out. It's been a tough journey. It's something I struggle with every day, every day. So this whole exercise has been a good deal for me to continue to work through it. And what the biggest thing that I've learned is think about keeping score. It's been very helpful for me to keep score on how am I doing versus what I think is important. Know what that is. Just figure that out. That took a while to figure that out. And then keep score on it and think, so where does God fit into that for me? So that's the journey. And then, Matt, thank you again. And then I've got a shameless plug because this is also something that Paul mentioned a little while back. He went to Zambia last year. I went to Zambia a few years ago. If you have any thought, family legacy, please consider that. It changed our life as a family. This happened before I went through all this stuff, but Family Legacy is an awesome organization that everybody at the church should consider. It'll change your life. That's it. Thank you.